Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second shir, I guess, of the Young Israel of Woodmere Women's Learning Program. There's still some men still in the room, but it's still a women's learning program. If they want to listen, it's okay. It's a big pleasure for me, a big schus to be here to share some Divrei Torah with you. Last year, we had the privilege of learning Hilchos Tefillah together, and this year, Baruch Hashem, you have the privilege of learning with my good friend, Rabbi Eliyahu Wolf. He'll be learning some Inyanei Tefillah with you on, I believe, on Monday mornings. So it's my pleasure to learn a little bit of a different topic this year, and that is appreciating the women of Tanakh. Just as a means of introduction, for those who don't know me, my name is Ephraim Polakoff, Rabbi Polakoff, and I'm the rabbi at Beis Tefillah of Woodmere, the Edward Avenue Shul. I also teach at DRS and SKA. One of my students is here. So DRS and SKA. During the day to keep me busy, and Baruch Hashem, I have a family on the side, or not on the side, but Baruch Hashem, wonderful things to be involved with. So I wanted to talk a little bit this year about appreciating the women in Tanakh, and I know we started a little bit late because of Rosh Chodesh, so I'll try not to keep you past 10:30. I know that everyone has busy schedules. You know, when we think about women in general, and that's who we're speaking with this morning, I think that it's important to think about society as a whole. When you think about society, you know, the Jewish community is really, Baruch Hashem, being very successful. I mean, you look at where Torah education and Torah life is currently in America, compare it to 100 years ago on these shores, it's unbelievable. It's indescribable. Of course, I wasn't around, you weren't around. But when you talk to, you know, your parents and grandparents, and talk to them about what America was like in those times, when they first came over to this country, there was nothing here. Now, they called it a midbar. That's what they called it. It was a desert. It was a spiritual wasteland. There was really nothing here. And to look out at the Jewish communities, whether it's the five towns, Brooklyn, Teaneck, Lakewood, you know, wherever it is, you look at the burgeoning and literally, you know, bursting, sometimes Jewish communities, and all the Jewish education and the yeshivos and the day schools and the institutions of higher education, Yeshiva University and Landers and all the yeshivos. I mean, you look at all the Torah that's being learned and YU Torah with thousands and thousands of shiurim, and people have access to Torah almost nonstop. You know, you're in the car, you have your smartphone, you just have constant access to Torah. This is something that's completely unprecedented, completely unprecedented. And even in Israel, you go to Israel and it's even almost to a higher degree, the level of spirituality and the level of learning and Jewish scholarship. It's really amazing. It's really astounding. And I think that when you talk to, you know, people, you know, your parents and grandparents, you know, they could never fathom such a thing, even in the land of Israel, you know, which was always a holy place. But to imagine the level of Torah learning, to imagine the level of scholarship, of Jewish education, of Jewish life that exists, I think is something completely unprecedented. And really, Baruch Hashem, with Hashem's help, we're being very, very successful. However, when you take stock of where we are as a community, I think sometimes, you know, we get the sense that something is still missing. That even though we have all of this Torah, we have all of this learning, we have all of these opportunities, there's still something missing. And very often we can't quite put our finger on it. We can't quite identify, you know, what that might be. But we feel that there's something, you know, that could be a little bit, you know, better, something that could be improved a little bit. I once read an article by Rabbi Moshe Weinberger of Esh Kodesh, and a wonderful, wonderful article. And the title of the article was that there's something missing, the soul. He identified that the soul, the, you know, what we would call the neshama, the feeling, the emotion behind Yiddishkeit, the emotion of Judaism, is sometimes a little bit lacking. We have all of the scholarship, and we have the shiurim, and we have the classes and the lectures, and we have the yeshivos and the day schools, and we have so much opportunity. But sometimes the feeling is not there. Sometimes that soul, that emotion, that emotional connection is not quite there. I remember, I actually saw the video, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal spoke about this topic once, and he said that he considers himself to be a masterful teacher. You know, he can explain the most difficult concept to the most uneducated students. He can break it down for them so that they can understand conceptually, intellectually, what he's talking about. He said, but the one thing I can't communicate to my students is how I felt in my father's shtibul on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur. how I felt as the Chazan chanted Kol Nidre, how I felt as the Shliach Tzibur was going through the Avoda in the Chazaras Hashatz of Musaf of Yom Kippur. That feeling, that emotion, that connection, being just swept up by all that's going on around me, and a nostalgia and an emotional connection to the Ribono Shel Olam, that's something that I can't communicate to my students. And Rav Soloveitchik was expressing his frustration that as a good teacher, which he considered himself to be, and he was, he couldn't communicate that. He could teach, he could explain, but he couldn't communicate that feeling. And that's a little bit what I want to talk about with this series, because I think as we go through, you know, appreciating and understanding some of the women of Tanakh and what the women of Tanakh represent, I think that we'll understand a little bit of what's missing, and maybe we can gain some insight in how to begin the process of fixing it. So I want to begin today with more of an introduction. At the end, towards the end of today's class, we'll talk a little bit about Chava. She'll be our first woman of Tanakh. And then throughout the next 5 or 6 weeks, I'm going to focus on different women, probably one woman per talk, per shir. Maybe try to focus on some of the women that we don't know so much about. Sometimes, you know, we hear about the women and we know about them, we know their names. Their names are famous, and maybe one or two episodes, but very often a great deal of their lives is hidden from us, and we don't really know, you know, what they represent and all that they contributed to Judaism and to what Yiddishkeit is today. So I want to begin with just going through some of the episodes that we find in the Torah, beginning with the Torah, the Chumash today, and gaining a sense as to, you know, what the women of the Torah were really all about. And I want to begin with Parshas Kisisa, which is the sin of the Egel HaZahav, the sin of the golden calf. And we're all familiar with the story that the Pasuk says, Vayar Ha'am, in source number 1, Ki Voshesh Moshe Laredes Min Hahar. I know there are a lot of sources, don't be intimidated, we're not going to read every word inside, but I just put it there if you want to do a little extra homework or some other reading. But we'll read some selections. So the Jewish nation saw, Ki Voshesh Moshe Laredes Min Hahar, that Moshe was delaying, Moshe wasn't coming down from Har Sinai, he had gone up, he wasn't coming down. Chazal explained that Bnei Yisrael miscalculated. They thought that he was coming down on a certain day, they calculated the 40 days and 40 nights, and they miscalculated, and they were mistaken. They didn't understand why Moshe was late, when in fact he really was not late. And of course we know that they panicked, because they needed some conduit, they needed some vehicle to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They felt that they needed something, someone, or something to help them with that relationship with Hashem, and they panicked, they didn't know what to do. And they came to Aaron, and they said to Aaron, Kuma Seilanu Elohim, Elohim, right, please get up and make for us a God, make for us some sort of a medium, some sort of a conduit between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Aaron, of course, is very flustered. If you read the Midrashim here, I mean, the people were angry. They were literally like in a panic mode. And you can imagine this mob scene. You know, they came and they panicked. And the Midrash tells us that Hur, right, Aaron's nephew, actually protested. He said, well, don't worry about it. Wait, you know, Moshe will come. And they killed him. You know, they killed Hur. So, you know, you're talking about a mob scene here, a panic scene. And Aaron himself wasn't sure exactly how to proceed, wasn't sure what to do. He didn't want to lose his own life, not just because he didn't want to lose his life, but he felt that they, you know, the people needed some kind of guidance here. There's no one left. Moshe's not here. They need some guidance. I can't just get myself killed. No one's going to be able to take them out of this mess. And Aaron tells them, Vayomer Aleihem in Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Aleihem Aaron, Parku Nizmei HaZahav Asher Be'oznei Nesheichem Uveneichem Uvenoseichem V'haviu Eilai. So Aaron says, listen, take all the gold jewelry that your wives have, that your children have, and bring me all that gold jewelry, and I'll create something for you. And we know that this is where the golden calf came from. The Medrash says something very interesting here, and many of you might be familiar with some of these sources in the beginning, but the Medrash says that why did Aaron instruct the men? Because if you think about it, he's telling the men, take the jewelry of your wives, right? The parku nizmei azahav asher be'oznei nesheichem. So he's talking to the men. And he's telling them to take the jewelry of your wives and bring it to me. So why is he doing this? Why is he taking this strategy? There was no other gold around. I mean, they had a lot of gold and silver. Remember, they took a lot of gold and silver out of Mitzrayim. So why specifically the jewelry of their wives? So the way that Rashi explains it, on Rashi right here on the spot, says that the women wouldn't want to part with their jewelry so fast. You know, the women like jewelry, they wouldn't want to part with their jewelry so fast. But the Medrash says something different. And if you look at source number 2 where it's underlined, the Medrash says, Amar Aharon Lahem Davar Kasha, that Aaron was giving them a very tough job. He knew this was going to delay them. Why? The women saw all of the miracles that God did. They saw of the miracles that God did in Mitzrayim. They saw of the miracles that God did at Yam Suf in Har Sinai. The women saw all of these miracles, and therefore Aaron knew that they wouldn't be so quick to give their jewelry because they didn't believe in this cause. They would have been more patient. They would have waited for Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore the men came to the women, and when they asked their wives and their sisters and their mothers for the jewelry, what was the response of the women? The women said, Chas v'shalom, we're not giving you our jewelry. We're going to do Avodah Zarah. We just witnessed all of the miracles that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us in Mitzrayim, at Yam Suf, in the Midbar, at Har Sinai. And now we're going to go do Avodah Zarah? Now we're going to worship a golden calf? Absolutely not. And the women refused. They refused to give their jewelry. And the Medrash goes on to explain that the men didn't have a choice. And the men ended up just giving other gold. They gave their own jewelry. They gave their own pieces of gold. Because the women weren't budging. And it's interesting. If you think about this Medrash, what was it that the women saw that the men didn't see? The women saw the same thing as the men. The men were in Mitzrayim just like the women were. The men were at Yam Suf, the men were at Har Sinai, just like the women were. So what does the Medrash mean here, that the women saw all the Nisim, all the wonders, the Nisim and the Gvuros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, and therefore they wouldn't budge, therefore they wouldn't move. We see that there's something to these Jewish women. You know, they don't just give in just because there's some situation that arises, some panic mode that arises. If you look at the next incident. And this is actually not an incident, but in Parshas Vayakhel, and this is a famous pasuk in Rashi, Parshas Vayakhel, the Torah is describing the construction of the Mishkan. And the Torah tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe that he should make the kior. The kior was made from Nechoshes. And how do you make the kior? B'maros hatzovos. So you should use the mirrors. And we're all familiar with the story of the mirrors. You should use the mirrors. Use the mirrors to make the kiyur, to make this basin from which the Kohanim are going to sanctify their hands, going to wash their hands before their service. And what were these mirrors? These mirrors were the mirrors that the women used to beautify themselves, to get dressed, to put on makeup. These are the mirrors that the women used. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Rashi explains right here in source number 4, Moshe Rabbeinu was a little bit hesitant. He thought to himself, you know, the mirrors, they're not all that holy. No, the women use it to beautify themselves, to get dressed, you know, to put on makeup, to fix their hair, to fix their sheitel. I mean, these aren't such holy items, holy utensils. You know, why are we using this for the kiyur? Why are we using this for the vessel from which the Kohanim are going to sanctify themselves? You know, Moshe didn't feel comfortable with this. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, if you look at the underlined line there in source number 4, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kabel. Hashem says, no, Moshe, I want you to accept these mirrors. I want you to take the mirrors of the women and build the kiyur from these mirrors. Ki elu chavivin alai min hakol. Because these mirrors are more beloved to me than anything. Shocking. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu thought that these mirrors are completely materialistic, focusing on the physical, focusing on gashmius, not something that should be used for the Mishkan, let alone the kiyur. Comes Hashem. Elu chavivin alai min hakol. No, these are the most beloved to me. These are the things that I love most. Sha'al yideihem he'emidu hanashim tzevaos rabos b'mitzrayim. Because this is what the women used to continue the Jewish nation in Mitzrayim. And the Medrash goes on to explain, and many of us are familiar with this Medrash. Rashi here quotes Chazal, that the men didn't want to have children. The men were tired, they were overworked, they were beaten, they were oppressed, they were tortured. You know, they weren't interested in continuing the Jewish legacy. They weren't interested in continuing the generations, continuing the nation. They weren't interested. They were tired. They were beaten. Literally, the life was beaten out of them. And the women knew what was important. And the women said, no, we have to continue the Jewish legacy. We have to continue the nation. We have to continue building families. Again, the men completely out of it. The men completely consumed by the terrible situation in which they found themselves, and the women were the ones to say, no, this is not what we need to do. Right now we need to build families. Right now we need to continue the Jewish legacy, continue the Jewish nation. So again, we see the women not getting caught up in the terrible situation in which they find themselves. And then finally, the story, the famous story that we know of in Tanakh, in the Chumash, of the Meraglim. We just read it in Parsha Shlach this past week. And we know the story of the spies. Moshe Rabbeinu sends out these spies. And the spies come back with a very unfavorable report. You know, Eretz Yisrael is not for us. We'll never be able to do it. We won't be able to conquer it. It's too hard. You know, and what did they say? If you look at source number 5, this is the some of the Pesukim in Parsha Shlach. In Pasuk Gimel, almost, you know, it's almost hard to say these words. V'lama Hashem mevi osanu el haaretz hazos. Why is Hashem bringing us to this land? Why is Hashem bringing us to Eretz Yisrael? Lin pol b'cherev, we're just going to die. We're going to die in battle as we try to conquer the land. Nashenu v'tapenu, excuse me, yihu lavaz. And our children and our wives will be destroyed, will be killed, will be abused. Halo tov lanu shuv Mitzrayma. Let's go back to Mitzrayim. It's much better if we go back to Egypt. Why are we getting into this mess? Why are we getting ourselves into such a complicated situation? Vayomru in Pasuk Dalet Ishel Achiv, and again you see that the men here are talking. Right? They said Nashenu v'tapenu. The men are talking about their families. And what did the men say? They each said to each other, Nitna Rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayim. Let's go. Pack up. We're going back. We're going back to Mitzrayim. And it's not like Mitzrayim was so great. It's not like they had such a great life there. That indeed, there's no religious liberty in Mitzrayim. There was no physical liberty in Mitzrayim. But they said, it's got to be better than this. We're not going to go into this situation. We're not going to just walk into Eretz Yisrael, which the spies are saying is so terrible. We're not going to do it. It doesn't make any sense. That's what the men said. But if you look in Parshas Pinchas, there's something very, very interesting. In Parshas Pinchas, we know at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, there's a census of the Jewish people. And the Torah counts all of the Jewish people. And then the Torah writes, if you look in source number 6, in Pasuk Samach Dalet, which is underlined, in this census, none of the people that were counted in the Sinai desert are included in this census. Why were they not included? Why in this census now, as they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, were none of those Jews included in the census? Because Hashem said to them, you're all going to die in the desert. You, Jewish people, who listened to the spies, who listened to the unfavorable reports, who believed what the spies were saying, that Eretz Yisrael is so terrible, and you wanted to go back to Mitzrayim, you're not going to make it. You're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. You're all going to die in the desert. That was their punishment. That was their decree. And right after this pasuk, in Perek Chavav, if you look at source number 7, we have the story of Benos Tzlafchad. Immediately following, we have the story of Benos Tzlafchad. Tzlafchad was a man who had 5 daughters. He had no sons. And we know that Tzlafchad had no sons, so his daughters were nervous. What's going to happen to his portion of the land? Usually the sons get the inheritance. It stays in the family. But what's going to happen now? We're going to marry out. What's going to happen to our father's portion? And we know, but Tzlafchad came to Moshe, and they wanted to know what to do. What should we do? We want a portion. If you look at the very end of source number 7, where it's underlined, what did they write? To know lanu achuzah. Give us a share in the land. We want a share in the land of Israel. We don't want to be left out just because we have no brothers. And here, Rashi comments in source number 8, why the connection between the census and Benos Tzlafchad? Why immediately following this discussion, the census of the Jewish people, right away we have the story of Benos Tzlafchad. And Rashi in source number 8 explains that although the Torah just told us at the end of Perek Chavav that none of the men were coming into Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because they believed the spies. They wanted to go back to Mitzrayim. None of them were coming into Eretz Yisrael. That was their punishment. They were all going to die in the desert. But that decree was only on the men. That decree wasn't on the women. Writes Rashi in source number 8, where it's underlined, Aval al anashim lo nigzira gzeiras ha-meraglim. The women were not punished with this decree after the meraglim. Lefi shehein hayu mechavavos es ha-aretz. Because the women loved the land. The women yearned to go into Eretz Yisrael. The women wanted to enter HaKadosh Baruch Hu's holy land. It was the men who were saying, Nitna Rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayma. And he says, that's why there's this connection between the census, and at the very end, the Torah tells us, none of the men were here. These men were not counted in the earlier count, because they all died in the desert. But that was only the men, not the women. Because if you look at the story of Benos Tzlafchad, T'na lanu achuza, give us a share in the land, you see that the women wanted Eretz Yisrael. The women yearned for Eretz Yisrael. The women didn't buy what the Meraglim were saying. So again, a third time, we find the women not getting caught up in this terrible situation. Not getting caught up by the Meraglim. not getting caught up by what the Meraglim were saying by the terrible reports. They said, we don't believe it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it's good, we know it's good, and we want to go. T'na lanu achuza. And if you think about all of these instances, whether it's the golden calf, whether it's their time in Mitzrayim with the Maros HaTzovos, with those mirrors, or whether it's the sin of the Meraglim, what was their key? What was the key of these women that they were able to see beyond that situation? Not to get caught up in all that the men were getting caught up in. Not to panic when Moshe Rabbeinu didn't arrive at that moment. Not to panic and say, that's it, we're in Mitzrayim, we're being oppressed, we're being tortured, we're being beaten, let's give up, let's throw in the towel. And not to give up when the Meraglim, when the spies came back and said, you know what, the land is not that good. What gave the women that resilience? So we all know that if we think about what special quality Jewish women are known to have, we say, we all know, Chazal tell us, that women have Bina. Bina Yesera. Women have an extra level of Bina. In fact, there's even a women's magazine nowadays called Bina Magazine. Right? Bina. That wasn't an advertisement, by the way. I think it's good. My wife likes it. But Bina. So where does this Bina come from? If you look at source number 9, the Gemara tells us that it's actually based on a pasuk. Because when Hashem created Chava, and we'll talk a little bit about Chava now, and then we'll come back to her a little bit later. But when Hashem created Chava, what does the Torah tell us? Amar Rav Chista in source number 9, my time at the Rebbe, dechsi vayiven Hashem Elokim es Hatzela. It says, the Torah says that Hashem built Chava, vayiven. Hashem built her. What does it mean that He built her? What's that language? Why does the Torah use the language of vayiven? Hashem, you know, the Torah could say Hashem created her. Hashem formed her. Why vayiven? Why this language of building? So says the Gemara, because this is to hint to this quality of Bina. Melamed shenasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bina Yesera Be'isha Yoser Mi Be'ish. This is to teach us that women have a quality that men don't have. There's an extra level of Bina. Not that men don't have any Bina, even though some of you might believe that. Not that men don't have any Bina. Men have Bina, but women have an extra level of Bina. Women have added Bina that men don't have. Now what is Bina? So it's great. Women have extra Bina. What does Bina mean? So you know, I generally hear women saying, you know, it's insight. They have a certain understanding, which is true. If you look at Rashi, and this comes up in several Gemaras, actually I just chose a Rashi in Parshas Kisisa, but really it comes up in several Gemaras as well in source number 10. Rashi is explaining the word tevuna, which is related to the word bina. You find also in the Torah the word navon. Navon v'chacham, tevuna and chachma. It's all related, it's all the same word. Bina, tevuna, navon. So comes Rashi and says, what does tevuna mean? Meivin davar mi libo, mitoch devarim shalamad. A woman has the extra ability to understand things and extrapolate from one situation to the next. A woman finds herself in one situation, she's able to extrapolate, she's able to infer, she's able to have insight into other situations which she doesn't see right now. But eventually one day she'll get there, she's able to learn from all that she experienced. She extrapolates. Mavin, the way the Gemara describes it, is Mavin Davar Mitoch Davar. She's able to understand things based on her experiences, based on the things that she's learned and the things that she's seen. She's able to have that insight and understanding and extrapolate and expand to other situations which are maybe new to her. That's the level of Bina. And I think if we think about all of these stories, we see that's really what's going on. The Bina is really what's happening here. If you think about it, it's this insight that women were able to see a little bit deeper than the men. Women were able to feel a little bit deeper. But I want to go one step further. There's a famous medrash that many, many people are familiar with that Rabbi Akiva, if you look in source number 11, it's brought in the Yalkut Shimoni, but it's brought many, many times in Chazal as well. And Rabbi Akiva learns, Darash Rabbi Akiva, Bizchus Nashim Tzidkanios, Yatsu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. That in the merit of the righteous women, we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. So many people have heard this Chazal. That means if it was just left up to us, we would still be there. Right? And not because we don't know how to get out, we're not familiar with the directions. It's because of the women. That's why we were redeemed. Bizchus Nashim Tzidkanios. That's why we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. Now what does that mean? Just the women were righteous, or the women were so holy, the women were righteous, so Hashem said, okay, righteous women, let's take the whole nation out. Not quite. So first of all, the Kli Yakar, fascinating Kli Yakar. Until I was preparing the shiur, I never heard this Kli Yakar before. But if you look at the Kli Yakar in source number 12, the Kli Yakar says that this wasn't just a spiritual thing, that the women were the saviors. But even on a physical level, the women were the saviors. Writes the Kli Yakar, and I think this will resonate with many of you. Shehabalim lo hayu yecholim la'amod zulas hanashim. The men just were not capable of functioning without the women. They were not capable, right? I see some nods, some smiles, right? 100%. The Kli Yakar knew this many, many generations ago, and it's still true today. The men could not function without the women. They were being beaten. They were being oppressed. They were working hard. They were being tortured. And they literally could not function. They were just throwing in the towel. They were giving up. They couldn't do it. Physically, the women were the ones who were giving them chizuk. The women were the ones who were saying, don't worry, we're going to get out of this. Stay strong. Keep it together. That's what the women were doing, but it's much more than that. There's a famous sefer called the Eim Habanim Simecha, which was written by Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal. It was written at the time of the Shoah, and unfortunately he perished in the Shoah. And it's a famous sefer because it was written by someone who began his life as more of an agudist from that camp, and really began to write a whole sefer all about the wonders of Eretz Yisrael and how we have to settle the land of Israel. And it became perhaps the most popular sefer on the topic of religious Zionism, Eim Habanim Simecha. That sefer is famous. But he also wrote several other sefarim which are not as famous. And one of them is called Mishneh Sachir, which is his commentary on the Chumash. And I want to read this together with you. It's really unbelievable how he describes what was going on in Mitzrayim and what the women were really responsible for. If you look at source number 13, first, he quotes the Chazal. He quotes it from the Gemara in Sota, what we just said, that in the merit of the righteous women, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. But if you look, starting where it's underlined, at the end of the first line there, in source number 13, he writes, Hainu, Dehem heim hishgichu al ba'aleihem ve'al b'neihem shelo yitmu b'tumas Mitzrayim v'shelo yisbolu b'in hagoyim. Who kept the men and the children Jewish? Who kept them from assimilating? Who kept them from mixing in with their neighbors? And think about it, it's so easy. Especially when you're broken and you're beaten and you're oppressed. It's hard to fight against the tide. It's hard to keep your own identity and your own religion. You want to just throw it in. You want to just let's be like everybody else. It'll be easier. Maybe the Mitzrim won't treat us so badly if we act like them. Right? Unfortunately, like people thought in the time of the Holocaust. Right? Maybe if we act like the Germans, you know, they won't treat us like Jews. You know, they won't mind. They still did. But maybe not. Maybe we should join with them. They raised their children with emuna. They kept their husbands away from sin. Listen to this line. They were the ones who kept up the Torah. They kept up the Yira. That connection with Hashem, the awe of Hashem, it was them. It was the responsibility of the Jewish women. They took it upon themselves. And if not for them, everything would have been lost. Who passed down the tradition? Who made sure the Mesorah stayed pristine, stayed pure? It was the women. It was the women in Mitzrayim who ensured this. If you look down towards the end of that paragraph where it's underlined, it wasn't just that they were righteous. And it wasn't just that their husbands couldn't function physically and they were helping them out. They were lending them a hand. Spiritually, their husbands would have been lost. Spiritually, their kids would have been lost in Mitzrayim. If not for them, they're the ones who towed the line. They're the ones who passed on the tradition. They're the ones who kept everyone sane and together and from. They're the ones who did it. Nimtza lulei hanashim tzidkaniyos halalu kfar haya avda she'ar. If not for the women, we would have been gone. Forget it. The Jewish nation would have been done. The Mitzrayim would have just beaten Judaism out of us. If not for those women. So it's not just that they were righteous. And it's not just that physically they held everyone together and they held their husband's hands and said, it's okay, you can do it, you can make it through. But spiritually, they were the ones who made sure that nothing went wrong. They were the ones who made sure that everyone stayed on the straight and the narrow. They were the ones, what we talk about, Chazal tell us, that Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim and they still kept Shemam, Lashonam, and Malbusham. Right? They still kept the Jewish names and they had their Jewish language and they had their Jewish clothing. Who was that because of? That was because of the women. That wasn't because of the men. The men would have given that up long ago. The Jewish women were the ones who kept that going. Not only that, but there's a medrash, a fascinating medrash, in Rus, actually, in the Medrash Zuta in Rus. And the Medrash tells us that a person, if you look at the source number 14 where it's underlined, the Medrash writes, Kol hanose isha kshera, anyone who marries a proper Jewish woman, ki ilu kiyem kol haTorah kula meirosh v'atzof. It's as if they fulfilled the entire Torah from beginning to end. Just by marrying this woman, it's as if they fulfilled the entire Torah. Why? Because she's going to help him. She's going to be the one who ensures that he does the mitzvos. She's going to be the one that ensures that he studies Torah. She's going to be the one that ensures that he passes on the tradition to his sons and his daughters. Without her, it's lost. She's going to be the one. And he says also, the Medrash says, that's why, if you think about it, Eishes Chayil is written Aleph to Tav. It's written in the letters of the Aleph base. Why? Because Aleph to Tav, the entire Torah, from Aleph to Tav, from beginning to end, that's because of the women. That's what the women give to their families. That's what the women give to their husbands. Without them, the Torah would be lost. And not only that, but the Medrash continues that if you look at the last underline there, the Medrash writes that it's not just Mitzrayim that we merited to get released from Mitzrayim because of the righteous Jewish women, but he writes, V'ein hadoros nigalim, ela b'schus nashim tzidkani yoshe bedor. In every generation, it's not just Mitzrayim. The Medrash expands it to every generation. In every generation, the Jewish people don't experience a redemption if not for the Jewish women. They're the ones who cause all the redemption that happens. All the salvation, all the redemption, all the wonderful things that come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's because of the Jewish women. It's because they're the ones who keep everyone on the straight and the narrow. They're the ones who impart the tradition to their families. They're the ones who make sure that everyone is studying Torah and doing the mitzvos. It's their responsibility, and it's their success. And that's why we merit all the geula that we do. There's one more piece to this, though. You know, we see clearly that the women, because of their Bina Yesera, they're able to see beyond. They're able to see beyond the situation in which they find themselves. The men get caught up with the golden calf, they get caught up with the Chet HaEgel, the women see beyond. Bina. Meivin davar mitoch davar. They know, they said, this is not it. Moshe's going to come back. The men get caught up in the current situation. The men get caught up in the situation in which they find themselves. And the men despair. The women are the ones who have that broad perspective. The women are the ones who have the broad vision, and they recognize and they say, you know what? It's going to be okay. Moshe Rabbeinu will come back, I guarantee. Just sit tight for a little bit. We're not giving Aaron our jewelry. It's because we know Moshe is going to come down. In the case of Mitzrayim, when the men were despairing, the men were throwing in the towel, physically, spiritually, the women said, sit tight. We have to build Jewish families. Why were they building Jewish families in the middle of Mitzrayim? What was the point of it? Because they knew they were getting out. Because they knew this wasn't the end. This is not the last stop. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised the Jewish nation that we're going to continue. We're going to thrive. We're going to succeed. We're not going to end here in Mitzrayim. We're not going to be buried here in Mitzrayim. We have to build Jewish families. We have to continue the Jewish nation. We have to continue the legacy that we've begun. Because this is just a stop. It's a challenging stop. But it's a stop on the journey. And we're going to get out of here one day. And also with the Meraglim. The land might seem tough. It might seem challenging. It's going to be hard to conquer. The men despair. They throw in the towel. Let's go back to Mitzrayim. This is not for us. We can't do it. And the women have that broader perspective. The women are able to have that bina mevin davar mitoch davar. And they say, no, you know what? It's going to be okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has saved us so many times in the past. He told us this land is good. It's going to be good. We just need to go. It'll be fine. Tanalanu achuzah. Give us a share in the land. That's all they wanted. Because that's the perspective, that broad vision that the Jewish women have. What's the root of that vision? Well, why is it that women have this bina? Is it just a bina yesera that exists in a vacuum? So I think that it has a root. I think that it has a source. And if you look at the Shalah in Parshas B'Shalach, an amazing, amazing source. And the Shalah describes, he's talking about the Shira that Bnei Yisrael sang after going through Yamsuf. And we know the men sang Az Yashir, and then the Torah describes that Miriam took the Tupim U'Mecholos. Miriam took the instruments and she led the women in song. And the Shalah explains, where was it that the women had these instruments from? Are you carrying around instruments in the desert? And the Shalah says the women brought the instruments out of Mitzrayim with them. Why? Because they knew that Hashem promised them that they were going to be saved. They knew it. They were preparing the whole time to sing Shira. They brought their instruments with them. They knew that Hashem was going to save them. They knew that they were going to sing Shira one day. They had that, writes the Shalah, they had that emunah. It wasn't just stam. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, they had that emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to come through on his promise. Emuna to the extent that they brought out their instruments because they knew they were going to sing one day. It might not be right now. Right now we're walking around in the desert. Kriyas Yamsuf, they're standing before the ocean. They could have thrown all the instruments in and just given up and said, hey, that's it. We're faced with the ocean. We're never going to get out of here. No, they held on to their instruments because they knew they were going to get through. They knew they were going to get out. And they knew they were going to sing Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And writes the Shalah, if you look just where it's underlined in source number 15. Ha'inyan hu, the idea is, Midas ha'tzadikim hu miyad shehuftechu ledavar tov, lo mar shir v'sherach la'ashem yizborach miyad. What do the righteous do? As soon as Hashem promises something good, right away they sing Shira. Because right away they know it's going to happen. They believe it's going to happen. They feel it's going to happen. Av she'adayin lo niskayim, even though Hashem hasn't done it yet. Hashem hasn't fulfilled His promise yet. But they know that it's going to happen. They have that emunah, they have that bitachon, they have that faith. They know it's going to happen. Ki zehu mitzad ha'emunah. If you skip down to the next underline. U'matzinu mida zu haisa b'nashim, yoser mi b'anashim. And who excelled in emunah? The men or the women? The women. The women had a great deal of emunah, much more than the men had. U'bizchus nashim tzidkaniyos nigalu yisrael mi'mitzrayim. And he says, that's what it means when Chazal say that in the merit of the righteous women, we were taken out of Mitzrayim. Miriam took those instruments because she believed. And not just her. All of the women. Hashem told them they're going to get out. Hashem said, I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. I'm going to bring you one day. You look at the Pesukim throughout the Chumash. Hashem is constantly promising us, I'm going to build you into a great nation. I'm going to take you to the land of Israel. The women knew all those promises. That's what they were taught when they were young. And they knew that it was going to come true. They believed it firmly. And that emunah is what I think was the root of their bina. They were able to extrapolate from one thing to the other. They were able to see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfilled His promise here. He's going to do it there too. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from X. He's going to save us from Y. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. He took us out of Mitzrayim. He's going to bring us into Eretz Yisrael. He's not going to leave us here in the desert. He's not going to leave us here by Yam Suf. We'll get through it. Meivin davar mitoch davar. They were able to understand one situation from another. They were able to have the insight and understanding from one to the other because of that strong emunah that they had. If you look back at Rav Teichtal, we're running a little bit out of time. We don't have time to go back. But if you look at that Rav Teichtal, his piece in the Mishneh Sachir, you see that what he's focusing on is the emunah. That's what they were teaching their children and their husbands in Mitzrayim. They were saying, have faith. Have emunah. Hashem didn't say He's going to kill us in Mitzrayim. Hashem said He's going to take us out. He's going to make us a great nation. He's going to bring us to Eretz Yisrael. You have to have the faith. You have to have emunah. You have to believe. The women believed. They were able to be meivin davar mitoch davar because of that emunah and understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to take it. I just want to conclude in the last few minutes with a discussion about Chava. You know, Chava is a little bit of a tragic figure in the Torah. We don't read that much about her. In Parshas Bereishis, we have a little bit about her. And that which we have printed in the Chumash is not all that complimentary. Right? It seems that she really messed up. She made a mistake. Adam also messed up, you know, by listening and by eating from the Eitz Hadas. But it seems that really Chava made a mistake. She messed up. We don't find too much, even if you look through the sources, you look through the Psukim and the Mefarshim and Chazal, you don't find all that goodness that Chava gave to the world, that Chava gave to her descendants. And yet we know, we name our daughters Chava. Chava is a popular name. So why is it, if all that we know from her is that she messed up, all that we know from her is that she sinned, so why is it that we still view her as our mother? We still view her as not one of the imahos, but preceding the imahos. We still name our daughters after her. She was still a tzadekes to some degree. So why is it, if all that we read about is her mistake? So I want to share a beautiful insight from Rav Hirsch, which I think explains this phenomenon. If you look through Parshas Bereishis, if you begin in Perek Beis, and you find the psukim that describe the creation of Chava from Adam, so you find that Hashem created Chava, but originally, Adam did not name her Chava. Adam, after all, was created first. What did he call his wife at the beginning? So if you look at Pasuk Chav Gimel in source number 16, he writes, "Vayomer ha'adam, zos ha'pam etzem me'atzamai uvasar mi'besari." This woman was created from me. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a piece out of Adam and created Chava from that piece. Writes the Torah, what does Adam call her? Lezos yikarei isha. The word isha, that was the original name given to this woman from Adam. He called her isha. That's what he called her. Why? Ki me ish lukachazos. Because she was created from ish. I'm the ish. She was created from me, so I'm calling her isha. If you look at the psukim before, what was Adam grappling with? He saw all the other animals had companions. They had a mate. He didn't have anyone. Lo matza ezer kenegdo, the pasuk says. He didn't find his helpmate. He didn't find his companion in life. That's what he was grappling with. That's what he was struggling with. Finally, he finds this woman. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates a woman for him. This is his ezer kenegdo. This is his companion. Ah, I'm an ish, and she's an isha. And what does the pasuk continue? Pasuk chavdalid al kain. We all know the pasuk. Yazov isha saviv yasimo v'davak miishto. And that's the nature, that's the natural order of things. What happens? You get married, you leave your husband, you leave your parents, you leave your house, you get married, and then the husband clings to his wife. And they become one unit. Beautiful imagery. And then the Torah says something very strange. Vayihiyu shnehem arumim. They were both not wearing any clothing. Ha'adam v'ishto. Adam and Isha, his wife. V'lo yisbo shoshu. And they weren't embarrassed. So first of all, we see the focus on the companionship. We see the focus on the connection between Adam and Chava. Not Chava yet. Between Adam and Isha. That's what the focus is. Adam is bothered. He doesn't have a companion. He doesn't have a helpmate. He doesn't have an Ezer Kenegdo. All the other animals he sees walking around with mates. And he wants one. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates Isha for him. He names her Isha because she comes from him. And he says, oh, this is great. He didn't have parents, but he says, from now on, men are all going to leave their parents, they're going to leave their parents' homes, and they're going to join up with their wife. They're going to become one unit. And all of a sudden, a strange statement. They were not wearing clothing, but they weren't embarrassed. What's the connection here with the clothing? Why are we discussing clothing? If you skip to Perek Gimel, there's another description of the creation of Chava. And here, actually, in Perek Gimel, in Pasuk Chaf, Adam calls her Chava. And it's very important because this is after the sin of the Eitz Hadas. After they eat from the Eitz Hadas. And Hashem punishes. He punishes the snake. He punishes Chava. He punishes Adam. Everyone gets a patch. Everyone gets punished. Now, Adam names his wife Chava. In Pasuk Chaf, Vayikra, in source number 17, Vayikra ha'adam shem ishto Chava. And now Adam, that Isha, that woman that he called Isha before, because she was just a part of him. Now he calls her Chava. Why? Ki hi ha'yisa eim kol chai. Because she's the mother of all life. So simple understanding, she's the mother of all life, meaning everything's going to come from her. All you have right now in the world is Adam and Chava. They're going to have children, their children will have children, and that's how the world is going to populate itself. Eim kol chai. But why now? Why didn't he think of this earlier? Only after the sin of the Eitz Hadas, now Adam names his wife Chava eim kol chai. Why is she more eim kol chai now than she was before? Very, very strange. And not only that, but when you find another perplexing pasuk after this, right after the sin, Adam names her Chava, pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayas Hashem Elokim la'adam u'l'ishto, kasnos or, vayal b'shem. And now Hashem makes them clothing. Now Hashem gets them dressed. Now they needed clothing. What's going on here? Why is Adam now naming her Chava? All the Mefarshim ask this question, why do you name her Chava now, right after the sin? And not only that, but what's the connection with the clothing? Originally, when he named her Isha, they weren't wearing any clothing and that was okay. Now after the sin, he names her Chava, now they need clothing. What's the connection here? Writes Rav Shimshon Lefol Hirsch, a beautiful idea. And he writes, what happened after the sin of the Eitz Hadas? What was brought into the world? Death. Death. Adam originally was going to live forever. Now, because of this sin, Chava listened to the snake, Adam listened to Chava, death was brought into the world. Now Adam is going to die. Not only that, but everyone who's born in this world is going to eventually die. Chava, almost to an extent, brought death into the world. So writes Rav Hirsch, why wasn't Adam furious? Why wasn't he upset? We don't find Adam being upset at Chava. He blames her, but we don't find him being upset, yelling at her, what did you do? You're killing me, you're killing our kids. We don't find him yelling at her. He gives her a new name. Chava, Eim Kol Chai, sounds like a beautiful thing. Now, after the sin, he gives her this beautiful name. He focuses on this? Because Adam, writes Rav Hirsch, Adam realized that before, I thought this woman was just about companionship. I thought that this was just about me finding a companion, me finding a mate. And as important as that is, as important as the here and the now is, as important as the situation in which I find myself right now is, but now I know death is coming into the world, this current situation is going to end. And who's going to be responsible for bringing life into the world? This woman. This woman that's here with me, this Chava, she brought death into the world, but she also is going to bring life into this world. She also was going to bring my children to this world. She's also going to be Eim Kol Chai, going to populate the world. It's all coming from her. So as much as she did bring death into the world, what does death represent? The end of the here and now. The end of the current situation in which I find myself. What is she bringing into the world also? The future. Because that's what women are all about. And I think this ties in so well to all that we discuss and with the theme that we really see from all the women throughout the Torah. The men are about the here and the now. Adam was focused on the here and the now. He was focused on companionship. I don't have anyone. Look around. All the animals have a mate, have a companion. I have no one. He was focused on now. After the sin with the Eitz Hadas, Hashem had to end the now. Hashem had to bring death into the world because this has to end. Life is not just about the here and the now. You need to really meet this woman. You need to really see what she's about. Because although it's true that part of her essence is companionship, it's true that part of her essence is being together with you as one unit, but that's not all that she's about. She's not just about companionship. She's not just about becoming one unit with you. She's about bringing life into the world. She's about Eim Kol Chai. She's about the future. She's about the future generations. Because women have that broad perspective. That's what women represent. And I think that's what Chava represented. Chava represented the expansion, the expanded vision, the expanded perspective, beyond the here and the now. If you think about the clothing, why is it that originally they didn't need clothing and now they did need clothing? So I discussed this on occasion in my shul. Clothing, Rav Hirsch explains that clothing represent the covering of the physical. Because the physical is the here and the now. The physical is the current situation. We live in this world. We need to gratify our physical senses. That's what the body represents. The clothing covers up the physical. Because the clothing represents something beyond, something broader, a broader vision, a broader perspective, a spirituality that's not in just the here and the now. That's what the clothing represents by covering up. It's the ruchnius covering up the gashmius. It's the future vision and future perspective covering up that physical body, covering up the here and the now. Because that's what women are all about. And that's why specifically now, Hashem said, now you need clothing. Now that you understand what Chava is all about, you understand she's Eim Kol Chai, you understand she's about that broad vision, broad perspective. She's about extending the future, not just the here and the now, not just the present situation. That's what she's about. Now you need clothing, because that's what clothing represents as well. I just want to conclude with a story that I heard from a Rebbe of mine, Rav Shragi Neuberger. He explained that when he was a child, his grandmother grew up in the United States and did not have much of a Jewish education. And he said he remembers one Tisha B'Av when she was very, very old and her eyesight was going. She was home and she asked her son, she asked her grandson, Rabbi Neuberger, to come and read the Haftorah of Dir Shu Hashem Behi Matzo on Tisha B'Av for her. She liked hearing that Haftorah, the comforting words of the Navi, Dir Shu Hashem Behi Matzo. And he came to the house, she couldn't see very well, and he read this Haftorah for her. And he remembers that afterwards she turned to him and she said, "Ah, what beautiful comforting words after the bitter kinos of this morning." And he said, "This was my grandmother who didn't have any Jewish education. This was my grandmother who didn't, not just she didn't go to Beis Yaakov, she didn't go to a day school, she didn't go to anything. She didn't have any Jewish education, nothing formal. But she had that feeling. She had that feeling, she had that emotional connection with the Ribono Shel Olam. She felt Tisha B'Av. She felt the kinos. And she felt the comforting words of the Navi." And I think that's perhaps going back to that original, the original introduction with which we began. That's perhaps what's missing a little bit from our Judaism today. As much as we have the education, we have the day schools, we have the yeshivos and the Beis Yaakovs, we have the system, we have YU Torah, we have all this study of Torah and the lectures and the talks and the shiurim and the access, we have so much. But sometimes we're missing a little bit of that soul. Sometimes we're missing a little bit of that connection. I think if we think about all of the women in Tanakh, the lesson that Chava left for us, which we don't hear about too much, but that lesson of expanding our vision, not just getting caught up in the here and the now and the now like the men so often do, but expanding our vision with the emunah that we have in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the ability to be mevin davar mitok davar, to see one thing and understand one thing from the other. That ability is what gets us that emotional connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's all reinvest in that connection, reinvest in our relationship with Hashem, and continue to pass on the emunah, the bina, and that connection to our children and grandchildren. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for coming.